This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, February 25th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, an Arkansas legislator once again tries to pass a bill to end wage theft in the workplace. Also, a conversation with Guy Raz, host of the TED Radio Hour. Trinity United Methodist Church expands its Sunday Supper program, and more. But first, in his weekly radio address, Governor Mike Beebe notes that Arkansas is being recognized as one of six states to receive a new health care grant, the $42 million State Innovation Model Grant from the U.S. Department of Human Services will help the state lower the costs of health care while increasing the quality of service. Beebe says it will be more affordable for everyone.
The system we are creating in Arkansas will reward physicians for providing high-quality care with good patient outcomes and will provide those patients with more personalized services. They will receive the types of services that our current fee-for-service payment system is not built to include. We think patients, particularly those with chronic conditions, should have more individualized care that will reduce the need for repeated hospital admissions and will create better health outcomes for them.
The initiative involves more direct service, allowing patients to have closer relationships with their healthcare providers. With Governor Mike Beebe out of the state until tomorrow, Lieutenant Governor Mark Dar is acting governor. Friday, Dar used his authority as acting governor to sign into law a bill making a list of concealed weapon permits secret.
It would go into effect Monday. The governor had a chance to sign it. He chose not to. This is something that was going to become law anyway. But I just felt the need to. I think it's a good piece of legislation, and I think it deserved a signature on it.
Beebe spokesman Matt DeCampbell says it took the governor by surprise.
It is not a signing that Governor Beebe condones. He, of course, worries about precedent. This is the first time this has happened in our, this is now the beginning of our seventh year in office, and the first we've heard of it for quite some time even before that.
Dar says he wanted to sign a controversial abortion bill as well, but stopped short when the bill's sponsor said he wanted to wait and talk to the governor on Tuesday. A survey released Friday by Talk Business and Hendricks College finds by a slight margin that most respondents support a bill that would allow weapons to be carried on college campuses by licensed faculty and staff. 49% are in favor of the proposal, while 43% are against it. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas says it shows that gun rights issues remain a divisive topic.
When you look at the numbers and you see that it's less than 50% support it or oppose it, it's both in the 40s. It really, there seems to be a lot of public opinion that's very evenly divided on this issue.
Those surveyed were also asked about whether the legislature should approve $125 million in incentives for a company to build a $1 billion steel mill in East Arkansas. 64% approve of the project, with 17% against. Another poll by Talk Business and Hendricks College gauged public opinion on the job performance of U.S. Senator Mark Pryor and Governor Mike Beebe, the two lone Democrats in state politics. 68% of the 675 Arkansas voters polled approved of the job Governor Beebe is doing, while 19% disapproved, and 13% were unsure. Senator Pryor didn't receive quite as favorable of a rating in the poll. 41.5% approved of the senator, while 35% disapproved of the job Senator Pryor is doing in Washington. With a re-election campaign set to begin next month in Little Rock, many in Arkansas and Washington see Pryor's seat as a point of potential gain for the GOP in the Senate. Late last week, the nursing program at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith received two gifts that university officials say will have a positive impact on students and the community. According to the City Wire, the Benefit Bank Endowed Professor of Nursing will be supported by a $250,000 professorship, while another $50,000 gift will fund the Benefit Bank Adult High Fidelity Simulator, a so-called SimMan, that gives nursing students more realistic training without the risk of a real live patient. It is the second SimMan lab for the college. The gifts will help the college recruit more highly trained faculty and expand the number of students annually accepted into the school's nursing program. The Razorback baseball team had a 1-2-3 win weekend at Baum Stadium. The Diamond Hogs defeated Evansville 10-4 on Friday, 5-2 on Saturday, and 10-2 yesterday. The team travels to Surprise, Arizona on Thursday to play in the Coca-Cola Classic. The first game will pit the Razorbacks against Arizona State. But the Diamond Hogs weren't the only successful Razorback team over the weekend. Both the Razorback men's and women's track and field teams yesterday took the Southeastern Conference indoor titles in the SEC Indoor Championships at the Randall Tyson Track Complex in Fayetteville. The women's track and field team scored 114.5 points during the three-day tournament, netting the program's fourth indoor SEC title and the first since 2003. The men's team scored 152.5 points, giving the program its 19th SEC indoor title. A winter weather advisory has been issued for Benton, Carroll, Washington, and Madison counties in northwest Arkansas, and for Delaware, Adair, and Cherokee counties in northeast Oklahoma. The advisory is in effect from 6 p.m. this evening until noon tomorrow. According to the National Weather Service in Tulsa, rain moving through northeast Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas this afternoon is expected to transition to snow across the area tonight and into Tuesday morning for northwest Arkansas. Tonight, expect rain before midnight, then drizzle before 3 a.m., and a chance of snow after 3 a.m. in northwest Arkansas. Expect lows in the lower 30s. Tomorrow will be cloudy with a 60% chance of snow before noon and a high near 37 degrees in northwest Arkansas. Expect partly cloudy conditions and a 30% chance of snow before noon and highs near 43 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, cloudy with lows in the upper 20s to lower 30s. A bipartisan duo of Arkansas legislators plan to file a bill this session to end wage theft in the workplace. Ozarks at-large's Jacqueline Froelich recently spoke with a state wage theft expert as well as the bill's sponsor and has this report.
Wage theft occurs when an employer intentionally withholds workers' pay or benefits. The Fair Labor Standards Act, the federal act, mandates minimum wage and compensation issues be enforced by the Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division, but inadequate enforcement has led to what some are characterizing as an epidemic of wage theft in America. The national nonprofit Interfaith Worker Justice Group claims wage theft affects hundreds of thousands of workers nationwide, particularly in low-wage jobs. The Northwest Arkansas Workers Justice Center, based in Springdale, hosts forums on the subject and occasionally stages public shaming campaigns in front of businesses accused of wage theft to bring attention to the issue. Spokesperson Ana Aguayo.
Yes, wage theft takes multiple forms in our communities. You find wage theft in the manners of not being paid minimum wage, not being paid overtime, sometimes seeing some irregularities in your paycheck where maybe you worked 45 hours and you're not seeing that overtime, or you work 40 hours but you're not getting paid the full 40 hours. Sometimes we also see it as employers' discount from workers' checks for certain things that should not be discounted from their checks. And other times, wage theft takes the form of getting no wages at all.
80% of the cases managed by the Northwest Arkansas Workers Justice Center are wage theft.
And some of the cases that we receive are also based, it's not just wage theft specific. Sometimes we see workers' compensation involved, discrimination to harassment, even threatening from the employer as a tactic to intimidate workers to not speak up about their being owed.
Mm-hmm. Workers can attempt to recover their wages by filing a complaint with the Department of Labor. And Ana Aguayo says her group can serve as advocate.
You know, it's really difficult for a worker here in Arkansas to recover owed wages. The current system as it stands doesn't guarantee you like immediate services for you to be able to recover your rightfully owed wages. Right now, you're looking at filing with the Department of Labor. It could take up from 3 to 9 months to like find a decision in the case, and that's only a decision. Then you have to litigate. If you were to go through small claims court, which is another avenue, it could take up to 2 months. But then again, if the judge files on your favor, then it's still your responsibility to recover or to reclaim those wages. And, you know, the way we try to help our community is by trying to get attorneys in our community to take these cases. Some attorneys are not that attracted when the amount is, let's say, $500, whereas $15,000, right? The difference in the amount. But wage theft is theft, and that's something that we need to fix at the legislative level.
Ana Aguayo and her organization have been working closely with Democratic State Representative Greg Letting, District 86, Fayetteville, who's sponsoring an anti-wage theft bill this legislative session. Again, he gave it a go during the 2011 legislative session where it stalled.
We were able to get this out of the Public Health, Welfare, and Labor Committee in the House, and we got it to the House floor, but unfortunately we came up a few votes shy. I forget the exact margin. It wasn't an overwhelming defeat, but it wasn't razor thin either. We had a few colleagues who were simply concerned about making sure that we weren't placing too much of a burden on small business owners, and that's certainly not what we want to do. We want to make sure that the legislation targets the bad actors.
The bill was assigned to interim study and will be refiled.
Senator John Woods, a Republican from Springdale, and I are now planning to introduce this legislation here within the next week or so. We do have bipartisan support. We still have a few concerns that we're trying to work through, but we're both confident that we'll see this legislation pass.
And worker advocate Ana Aguayo says the proposed measure, as they say, will have some pretty sharp teeth.
So the objectives of our bill is to prohibit illegal deductions from all wages, regardless if it's whether minimum wage, overtime, or promised wages. We want to establish a deadline for payment of all wages, regardless if the employment has ended or not. And we also want to have a penalty for late payments of any wages available either by a lawsuit or through the Department of Labor Enforcement. And finally, we want to define compensable time for purposes of wage payment statute within the Federal Labor Standards Act. So in essence, what we're trying to do is help establish a sense of accountability with employers so that workers can expect their check within a week if they're terminated, right? Or regardless if they're terminated or not, but that they don't have to go through month after month without, you know, their rightful paycheck.
According to a study published in 2011 by the Progressive States Network, Arkansas is among 20 states where wage theft laws have been found to be grossly inadequate. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about wage theft, visit the Northwest Arkansas Workers Justice Center at nwawjc.org. Support for a super project, support for expanding Medicaid, and the world's largest retailer has a big fourth quarter. Roby Brock has more on the latest business and political headlines from around the state.
The Arkansas legislature has received a letter of commitment from the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, which will trigger the next phase in the Amendment 82 super project law. AEDC officials submitted a letter to lawmakers signed by representatives of Big River Steel, which is planning a $1.1 billion, 525-job steel mill super project near Osceola in Mississippi County. By law, the submission has to go to the leader of the House and the Senate, which will begin a 20-day working day window to review an analysis done by the state on the super project. State legislators are being asked to approve a $125 million bond issue to help finance loans and incentives to Big River Steel. It's expected that a March 21st deadline will have to be met to conduct the analyses, return them for legislative review, and pass necessary legislation. Now, a statewide survey of 675 Arkansans conducted by Talk Business and Hendricks College showed that 64.5% support the state legislature approving that big $125 million bond issue for the steel mill project. Only 17.5% of respondents said the bond program should not be approved, while 18% said they were undecided. Despite a rocky start to the calendar year, Walmart stores reported a strong end to 2012. The Bentonville-based retail giant reported full fiscal year net income of nearly $17 billion, up 8.3% for the year. For the fourth quarter, net income totaled more than $5.6 billion. That was up almost 8% compared to the year-ago period. Windstream Corporation's fourth quarter pushed its full-year results to a 44% increase in revenues and flatline profits as the telecom and data provider continued tweaking its product and service mix. Little Rock-based Windstream reported 2012 fourth quarter net income of $10.1 million on revenue of $1.5 billion. 1 year ago, the company posted fourth quarter net income of $44 million on revenue of $1.2 billion. America's Car-Mart posted third quarter net income of almost $8 million on revenue of $119 million. Same-store sales rose 8.8% in a quarter-over-quarter comparison. The results were an improvement from a year ago. USA Truck announced that John Simone has been appointed president and CEO and has joined the company's board of directors. Former CEO Cliff Beckham has returned to his previous role with the Van Buren Trucking Company as chief financial officer. Global Food Group will locate a new manufacturing and packaging facility in Clinton, Arkansas, investing $4.7 million and adding 224 new jobs to the region. The company makes products such as retail sandwiches, quesadillas, tortillas, and burritos. Global Food Group's customers also include Associated Grocers, Super Value, Harps, and Food Giant. I'm Robbie Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. This weekend, the NPR program The TED Radio Hour begins a new chapter. The basis of the show, which launched last summer, remains the same: to take some of the best moments of the thousands of TED Talks and place them inside an even bigger context. You can hear the TED Radio Hour on KUAF every Sunday at noon. The new host of the TED Radio Hour is Guy Raz, formerly the host of Weekend All Things Considered. Guy recently talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the show.
We went from, you know, I went from working on Weekend All Things Considered and really working to transform that show into something different and at times magical, really, with a group of people who were just amazing, putting together a show that we felt had to be worth your time. You know, it was on Saturday and Sunday at in the afternoons, and we wanted to make sure that you were listening for a reason. And now we have this opportunity at TED to take amazing content. You know, there are something like 10,000 talks at the TED website, talks about big ideas. And for folks who don't know a whole lot about TED, it stands for Technology Entertainment Design, but really the talks are about things far beyond those three areas, about outer space and the universe and love and beauty. Just big ideas and how they shape the way we see the world. So we are able to take those talks and that content and really figure out the parts of it that we think and hope will move our listeners. So the show is not just a show that's going to rebroadcast TED Talks. We bring the TED speakers back on the air. We re-interview them. We sort of go behind the stage with them and continue the conversation on a couch, if you will. You know, that's how we want to think about it. And it's a journey. It's going to be a journey into places that hopefully we'll all go on together. And in the end, we hope we'll change the way that all of us see part of the world.
You know, so many of the TED Talks, if people spend time online watching, are about discovery and thinking of things a new way. And that's kind of the opportunity you have, you and your team, putting this show together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are, you know, our goals are big and our ambitions are big because this is really a new opportunity for NPR. We're partnering with an organization that is, like us, devoted to spreading ideas worth talking about and listening to. You know, how many times have you talked to somebody and they've said, oh, did you hear this amazing story on NPR or public radio? It happens to me every other day. And TED has a similar kind of impact on people. You know, they'll say, oh, I saw this amazing TED talk about this, and it made me think about that. And so we have an opportunity to really try and think about themes and stories and ideas presented at TED that really could change a part of the way you see the world. And also, we wanted to do it in a way that might change the way we present radio. So the show is not going to sound like a traditional NPR interview program where you'll hear me talking to somebody, but it's going to have elements of that, but it's going to move very quickly at times, and then we'll downshift and it'll slow down. But it's really designed to be a journey. So we'll have lots of music in the show and sounds and different voices that tell stories in different ways. And we're doing that because we believe that we have this amazing opportunity to experiment with the ideas that TED brings out and with the way that we at NPR are sort of storytellers and thinkers and innovators when it comes to making radio.
You know, you're moving, you personally, from Weekend All Things Considered, which, as you mentioned, transformed, and the show is certainly different than it was, but it was an established sort of brand. And while TED is a brand that many of us know, TED on the radio is not. So this is both liberating and, I would imagine, just at least a bit frightening?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. There are risks involved. You know, my whole career, this is my 16th year at NPR. I left for 2 years to go into television. That's a different story entirely. But my whole career has been here, essentially. You know, I came here as an intern when I was 21, and I've been here for almost 16 years. So I've been in news my whole life. I was a foreign correspondent. I covered wars. I lived in airports. I was constantly on the road. I covered the Pentagon. I covered Washington agencies. I mean, this is what my life was, and I still love news. And some of my colleagues here were sort of surprised when I decided to do this because they thought, God, how could you leave this established show that millions of people listen to? And even I thought about that. But, you know, I think that to me, this opportunity to try something new and to create something new is something that's very attractive to me. There's this kind of startup entrepreneurial ethos that we can sort of develop with this show. And while we certainly had that at Weekend All Things Considered, and I loved it, and it excited me every day to come to work, this was an opportunity I couldn't pass up because TED is doing things that are so innovative and so fascinating that I thought, wow, I mean, what an opportunity for NPR to be able to take those ideas and work with them and create something magical.
Have you been with the project long enough to know what a typical week is? I mean, do you spend time with your staff? Do you examine TED Talks? Do you listen to them and then kind of categorize? How do you get prepared for each week's show?
Well, we start by doing work way in advance. So I've actually been with the show since December, and I was sort of doing double duty, hosting Weekend All Things Considered and also starting to develop this show, because the shows are so highly produced and they are so meticulous and rewritten and carefully thought out that they take weeks to do. It's not a show that we can put together in a short period of time. We have to really think deeply about what we want to say and what we want to explore, and that means there's lots of watching. You know, we find talks we love, and then we think about building a show and a theme around that talk, but we have to bring in other talks and other TED speakers. And so we really spend a lot of time mining the TED archive and then figuring out how to connect, how to create a through line, a thread that connects all of those shows. So it's a lot of thinking, and then it's a lot of research, and then it's actually doing the interviews, and then it's figuring out what to use from the interview and what to use from the TED Talk, what kind of music we want to use, what kind of sounds we want to use, what kind of stories we want to tell, whether we want to bring in ancillary characters into the show. So it's a huge process. It's a big process, and we we spend, God, you know, 10-hour days every day just trying to get it a little bit better and better. In fact, there was a 30-second segment of one of the shows, and it took me a day and a half to figure out how to make it right.
It's nice to have that luxury, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Sometimes it's not a luxury that I think we can always take advantage of,
right.
But it was more like a mental block. You know, I couldn't get through that 30 seconds, but we did. I broke through it.
Finally, and here's an impossible question, but what makes a good TED Talk good?
You know, I think a good TED Talk moves you, and really, as I've said, it changes. It doesn't necessarily change your life, and it doesn't change everything that you think about, but it might change the way you think about something or some idea, or it might make you look at the world in a slightly different way. You know, it's a talk that connects with you on a level that is almost unconscious, or a talk that you watch and you say, I have been there, and this person is framing a part of my world in a way that I never thought about, whether it's failure or making mistakes or space, looking up at the stars, you know, and one of our shows is going to address this. I mean, how often do people in Fayetteville or anywhere in this country look up at the stars and say, that's the past. I am looking up at history, and it's happening in real time. That light that's reaching me from that star happened 8 years ago or 20 years ago or in some cases thousands of years ago with just the stars we can see. And we can just see a few hundred, and there are 400 billion of them in our own galaxy. And so it's those kinds of things that I think make a TED Talk successful, you know, when it can really move you and change a part of the way you see the world.
Guy Raz is the host of the newly designed TED Radio Hour from NPR. The program may be heard Sundays at noon on KUAF. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums late last week. It's Monday, February 25th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hey.
Hi.
Did you ever dream of doing Steel Magnolias?
Are you going to be mad if I tell you I haven't seen the movie?
Oh, Lord. Sometimes I forget how young she is. Okay, for those of you who love Steel Magnolias, you too can do this play. Auditions are tonight at 7 o'clock at the Fort Smith Little Theater, and it would be a really fun show to do. Or you can go to the University Symphony Orchestra concert at 7:30 tonight at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets are $5 for adults. And again in the River Valley, Biloxi Blues, a play I'm really excited about. One night only. It's the Montana Rep Touring Company, one of the best regional theaters in the country, and they will be presenting the middle play of Neil Simon's trilogy.
I was going to say, I thought it was a trilogy, but mm-hmm. I wasn't quite sure. Okay.
And it starts at 7:30 at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $20 at 632-2129. Go play.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
I have a safe and sure retreat when I'm alone with God. A perfect peace and happiness where sorrows never trod. Oh, praise His name, His holy name, salvation full and free. All glory to the blessed Lamb, my Savior leads the way.
Tony Alamo was born Jewish in 1934 as Bernie Lazar Hoffman in Joplin, Missouri. Some might be surprised to learn that one of the first loves of the anti-Semitic, anti-Catholic, anti-Muslim man's life was music.
Alamo considered himself a musical promoter and manager, in addition to being a singer and recording artist. Twice divorced, also Jewish and 9 years his senior, Susan Alamo was born Edith Horn in Northwest Arkansas. Independently of one another, Bernie Hoffman and Edith Horn had each relocated to Southern California to seek fame in the entertainment business. He is a singer and she is an actress. Instead, the pair found one another and found infamy in another form of showbiz, religious ministry.
I do records myself. I don't believe that there's anything wrong in doing a love song because the Lord commands you to love your wife. And I have done a love song album for my wife, but it was music that was from decades ago when music was pure and clean.
A Christian conversion saw Tony and Susan Alamo evangelizing in the streets of Los Angeles and beyond, and eventually establishing a commune. By the mid-1970s, they'd left California and set up in Georgia Ridge in rural Crawford County, where Susan was born, and also Dyer in Alma, Arkansas. A 1976 Department of Labor judgment against Alamo for not paying his followers for working at church businesses was a harbinger of things to come. The early court case also seemingly validated not only the Alamos, but their conspiracy theories, and served as a convenient example of Satan working through the government, trying to bring the ministry, and by extension, God, down.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar. Floating on the silence that surrounds us.
Here's Alamo from an early 1980s interview with longtime Arkansas journalist Ron Breeden, conducted at Alamo's restaurant in Alma. It was during a time when the Alamo Church seemed to operate most of the businesses in town, and Alamo's relationship with the press and the public at large was deteriorating.
It wasn't just record promotion. I was an impresario. I can take ideas. One thing that the press doesn't like to mention is that I own about $1.5 to $2 billion worth of record masters right now. I own a Beatles album that is valued at $600 million. I've owned this Beatles album for a lot of years. It's a record that has not been released.
The world has still not heard Tony Alamo's alleged master tapes of the Beatles and others, nor is there any evidence Alamo managed or promoted the Rolling Stones or the Doors. An evangelist's claim of having a hit single in the early 1960s called Little Yankee Girl has been refuted. However, thanks to the generous offerings of his followers, Alamo did cut songs with top-flight studio musicians and launch his own vanity record label. The Alamo Records label sports a black background and the Alamo World Ministries logo of the planet Earth with a cross atop it. Alamo was also able to take out ads in industry magazines promoting the man, the message, and his music. Still, before his downfall, Tony Alamo could claim some recognition in show business, but it wasn't through music or religion. The Alamo Designs clothing brand caught the attention of Hollywood in stores like Macy's and Saks Fifth Avenue. The Alamo of Nashville label appeared on denim jackets, then costing around $1,000 a piece, and worn by the likes of Dolly Parton, Mr. T, and Brooke Shields.
What can I say to you, Bonita? What magic words will capture you?
The Alamos got less pleasant attention beginning in the 1980s, with the Tony and Susan Alamo Foundation tax-exempt status being revoked after an IRS investigation. Susan, who was said to be the real authority behind the church and who preached while Tony merely sang, died of cancer in April 1982. Susan's embalmed body was said to lie in state for months before being placed in a heart-shaped mausoleum on Alamo's 250-acre compound.
I believe that God is going to raise Sue up from the dead. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be able to, I don't know what I'd do.
In 1989, Tony Alamo was charged with abuse of the child of one of his followers and went underground before he was caught. In 1991, when the evangelist was again a fugitive, Susan's body was removed from the mausoleum by break-in just before the property was to be seized by federal officials. Marshals were there to satisfy a $1.8 million child abuse judgment against the foundation. Alamo's other properties, including commercial properties, a farm, and the Alamo Church, were also confiscated. Alamo's minions kept Susan's body hidden from authorities through the 1980s and most of the 1990s until 1998, when he agreed to return the body, only because it would have jeopardized his prison release on tax charges.
I believe that she will be raised soon. I don't have any message from the Lord on exactly when she's going to be raised from the dead.
In the late 1990s, the church moved to Falk, Arkansas in Miller County, and the charges continued to pile up. Finally, in 2009, Alamo was convicted and sentenced to 175 years in prison in Texarkana Federal Court for taking five underage women across state lines for sex in violation of the Mann Act.
As you might find under your windshield wiper someday, Alamo's followers continue to carry on the ministry, if not the music. Although one track from several years ago claimed, the American Disc Jockey Association feels that Tony Alamo is a better singer than Frank Sinatra, Perry Como, or Andy Williams.
We're doing exactly what the Bible says, so we couldn't be a cult. Everything that is in the Bible, we believe 100%. We're the furthest thing from a cult in the world.
From when things were more placid at the Alamo compound, here in its entirety is Tony Alamo, formerly of Crawford and Miller counties, on his own Alamo record label, with Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and the wind where I want to be, here with you so close to me, until the final flicker of life's embers. I who was lost and lonely, believing life was only a bitter tragic joke, have found with you. The meaning of existence, oh my love, this is where I want to be, here with you so close to me, until the final flicker of life's existence, oh my love, quiet nights of quiet stars.
Formerly of Crawford and Miller counties, Tony Alamo and his Alamo label with Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
This is Ozarks at Large. Local residents have been able to get a free meal once a month at Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville through its Sunday Supper program. Every third Sunday of the month, the church would serve a meal at 3:30 p.m. Starting this weekend, that program will expand to every week, thanks to several other organizations wanting to participate in the program. Late last week, I spoke with Leslie Belden, Parish Associate at First United Presbyterian Church in Fayetteville, and Terry Gosnell, pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church, about the expansion of the program. During our conversation, Terry told me he was initially inspired to start Sunday Supper after attending a preaching conference a few years ago. When he returned to Northwest Arkansas, he spoke to members of his church as well as local restaurant owner Mama Dean.
Mama Dean and I had a connection because she was from Hope, Arkansas, and I'm from Nashville, Arkansas, and they're not far apart. And she said every Sunday after worship, she and her mother would put on a feed for the whole church and for the whole neighborhood and invite everyone, regardless of if they came to church or not, and that it was really about community. And we live in a society that is fragmented, I believe, right now. And we don't really know what community looks like anymore. And so the expanded version of this is because there are all kinds of people wanting to get involved. First United Presbyterian, Tricycle Farms, St. Paul Episcopal Church Youth, Disciples of Christ, Mount Comfort. There's a Korean United Methodist Church that meets at my church, Trinity. And
Good Shepherd Lutherans.
And Good Shepherd,
yeah.
Oh, is that?
It's a done deal, yeah.
Good Shepherd Lutheran is going to join in as well. And it's a meal. Well, of course, in the Christian tradition, you know, it's all about a meal, the Last Supper, communion. And so what better place to break down barriers, to knock down walls that we erect ourselves than a meal? And we have all these people that want to come, and it's not a soup kitchen. It is for people to address food insecurity, but everyone is invited, rich, poor, gay, straight, black, white, everyone. And this is really a strong attempt to create community, even regionally. We'd like to be a model for other churches, even in other parts of Fayetteville and Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, to really take a lead in addressing some of our issues in our culture. And I think a lot of it is isolation.
How did these other groups come to be involved in this? Did they express interest, or did you go out looking for them wanting to expand the program?
A little over a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, the women of the church at First United Presbyterian had heard of this new organization called Feed Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. They were hearing some of the statistics about how at many of our schools in Fayetteville, 70% of the children are on free or reduced lunches. 70%. And that one out of four children is going to be actually hungry in our schools. I mean, literally hungry. And they were appalled. So we decided to do a study on hunger. I started visiting with Denise Garner of Feed Fayetteville, and we started having speakers come in every week. So we had someone from Life Source and Cobblestone Farms and every Sunday speaker after speaker. Well, I'm also I guess you call me the clerk of the Fayetteville Ministerial Association, which means that I have everybody's email address. So I just started asking around and said, let's have a meeting. Let's talk. Let's all talk about this. Our youth had already gone out and helped one Sunday with the meal over at Trinity. And when all the churches got together and some of the helping organizations, many of us decided that a good next step was to expand the program that was at Trinity that was once a month to every Sunday because we can and because we should. And many of us, like First United, I mean, we're on a hill. We're far away from where anyone would come to eat. So we need to go where the people are. And we don't have to do it our place. Some of the other churches, like St. Paul's, that's helping, and First Christian, they're in a good location, but we wanted to be a part of this community building that we were all working together at one place. And you know, there's not public transportation on Saturdays and Sundays. And so we really needed to have this somewhere where people were already coming, that they were comfortable, and that it's Trinity is in an area of a community that is underserved by you know, where you can walk and get something to eat. So, you know, if you're depending primarily on foot traffic, it's a good place.
So you mentioned that this is not just for people who are dealing with food insecurity. It's for anyone. But how does a supper work? If I show up, what happens?
What happens is we eat. And we also have music. There are various groups, and we're going to expand our music as well. You have some religious music, but we have non-religious music as well. And I believe that that's only going to expand. But we do have servers. Mm-hmm. But even if people come from these other churches or even from our church, Trinity, Sometimes people think, oh, I've got to do something. I've got to serve. I've got to work. And we don't need that many servers. But what we do need is people connecting with other folks. Mm-hmm. It's about relationships. And so that's the whole purpose of this.
We're hoping, like, anyone who comes in is a guest, unless you're assigned a task. But everyone is a guest, and our goal is that no one will be treated differently than any other person. We are going to try to keep records about, you know, how many people are there, how many children are there, because there are funding opportunities, especially with feeding children in the summertime. But what we're hoping is that not only will people who need this meal, not only will they be fed physically, but through the relationships that they're building and through the connections and the networking, that they can find other opportunities so that before too long, maybe they'll be one of the people serving. Mm-hmm. There are also opportunities to go work in the garden at Tricycle Farms because anyone can help with this just by smiling, just by greeting people, but also by working in the farm. So many of us need to learn that connection with the earth where our food comes from. We're also making a big effort to become more sustainable. We're going to start washing our dishes instead of throwing them away. We even have somebody, this is great, we have somebody that is sewing cloth napkins so that we won't be throwing away napkins. We're hoping that for everybody this will be an opportunity to live into our faith in every way possible.
Do you have any concerns expanding the program from once a month to every Sunday?
Well, I think it's going to be different.
I mean, maybe as small as having to acquire more food.
Well, I that's a good question, but I think that's the beauty of this, too, is that it's not just on one church. Mm-hmm. It's on six or seven churches now, and we are working with Feed Fayetteville, and they have some connections with local meat producers.
We're starting to get, through Feed Fayetteville, Seeds That Feed, Ozark Natural Foods is involved with this. Mm-hmm. The Fayetteville Farmers Market is involved with this, and the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance. So what we're hoping and planning to do is to get grants, and each church is committed to, when it's their week to prepare the meal, that there is some cost to the churches, but we hope to find, and we at least it looks like we're going to have a lot of help with that. And also, I believe that all the churches are members of the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank, which makes a huge difference. We can get almost four times as much food by purchasing there than we can here. So right now, the Presbyterian Church and some of the others have been feeding at community meals. And we're finding that we can feed someone for about $1 a person. So with 100 people, that's $100. And if it grows to 250 people and some of the food costs are underwritten or donated food, then we can still keep those costs really low.
What is your hope for this program aside from being less segmented and pulling people together? Do you hope it'll be a model for similar programs?
There is absolutely no reason that this shouldn't be a model for many other churches in Fayetteville to emulate. Just get 4 to 10 churches to get together in parts of the community, and we could do this all over Fayetteville, and not just Fayetteville. I mean, Springdale can do it, Rogers can do it, Bentonville, Fort Smith. I mean, just, I know, kind of taking the lead from Denise Garner and Feed Fayetteville. Yes, we have Feed Fayetteville, but there can be Feed Springdale, Feed Rogers, Feed Fort Smith, Feed Alma, Feed Pocahontas and Paragould, you know, West Memphis. It's not that hard. And it really is, you know, if we're called to follow Christ as Christian communities, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Feed my sheep.
Terry Gosnell is a pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville, and Leslie Belden is a parish associate at First United Presbyterian Church. I spoke to them late last week inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio about the expansion of Sunday Supper. The free community meal is open to anyone. Sunday Supper will expand to every Sunday beginning this Sunday at 3:30 at Trinity United Methodist Church. The church is located at the corner of Sycamore and Garland in Fayetteville. More information is available at 575-9500.
You've got dinner table discussion, water cooler chat, even pillow talk, but how often are you part of the national conversation? I'm Neil Conan. Raise your voice on everything from the news of the day to the twists and turns of culture and history on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. The Alma Performing Arts Center presents Neil Simon's Biloxi Blues tonight at 7:30. This nationally touring production shows the humor and humanity of a young group of recruits headed to war. Tickets and information available at almapac.org or 632-2129. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville Rogers Fort Smith Forum. Forum, for those of you that don't know, is located in Madison County, just north of Huntsville. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I will be joined by my co-host, Kyle Kellums. And to end today's show, we're going to have a little bit of music from a local band called Little Chief. It is comprised of four University of Arkansas students. They recently won a contest where they were able to have they were awarded the money to have an EP recorded, and they will be releasing that soon. They came into the studio late last month, and we will have more from that interview on Friday's show. But for now, here is one of their original songs called Hiding and Seeking. Thanks again for listening, and I hope your week is off to a great start. So